And hopefully, as long as that goes well, top three in there. It's a pretty fun thing, classic. I'm going to run. A few races before that. Not sure exactly where I'm going to start the track season. A few options. You know, the early, middle to late April, early May kind of thing. Outback, Stanford, with a few different options. But basically those plans are going to be made in the few days after, the week, a few days after this race. So,
now that you've had time to kind of look back on last year, I mean, how do you, I'm sure, you know, after Worlds, you're a little bit disappointed, but I mean, you end up having the top time, I think, 1500 in the world, number two in 800. I mean, how do you now kind of judge the whole season?
I think it was the whole season was a great success. It's just different when, you know, the best isn't like, you know, you always want to hear the best years are the years when, like, your last race is, like, the biggest race, you know, when the very end of the season is, like, some big breakthrough and you end on a super high note, which was not the case last year. Even though, you know, the Fifth Avenue, finishing well at Fifth Avenue was nice. But it was definitely a success. I think the biggest thing that I did last year was, like, I took myself to a new level, like, in training. Like, the things that I was able to get myself to do in training last year, I was clearly, had made a jump, forward. So, it's kind of neat now to be continuing that, and hopefully make another step. So it was definitely a huge success in training and racing. So, you know, I learned a lot too. You know, Worlds wasn't what I wanted, but you know, I've now been in three outdoor 1500 championship meets. So, you know, hopefully if I make it back again, that'll be my fourth time. So it's gonna feel more and more comfortable. I can just focus on the race and not have to worry about anything else.
You talked to Bernard lately?
I haven't talked. I saw him when I was. I came up here for the to watch the Olympic trials, the marathon trials, and I saw him there. And just, you know, didn't talk a whole lot. I'm sorry, I saw him again at Nike Team Nationals. So we, you know, he lives in Arizona and I live in Virginia. So
he still wants to do a targeted, you know, event.
Definitely. You know, what goes on and physiology of the body is, like, you know, it's hard to predict sometimes, and it's hard to, you know, if everybody knew exactly how the body worked and could get your body to do exactly what you wanted it to do when you wanted, you know, people would be running, you know, 2 minute miles or something to find out, you know, that's kind of the process of, that's part of training, is like learning how your body reacts to different situations. And getting yourself to run exactly at the right time is part of it. And for the most part, we do a pretty good job. I'm always doing pretty well, you know, when I want to be. But like I said, it just takes experience, learning, you know, what the best training and racing formula is. And the problem is that it changes. You know, one year it may be one way, but then the next year it would be different. And so it's like, it's not like there's a one set exact way of doing it.
Well, I know it obviously changes from runner to runner, but have you ever tried to pick the brains of any, you know, successful?
Not really. I mean, I not really. I think that, you know, it's something that you kind of have to do on your own. Just like getting into different racing situations. Like, there's nothing that anybody can. I mean, they can give you advice, but there's nothing like going through it yourself. Like, there's nothing like learning by doing. I think that that's, to me, I feel like that's the best way. And
are you changing, you know, your mileage or the distances you're running in training? Or are you playing with that at all?
Slightly. Just a little bit more, a little bit faster. Nothing extreme, you know. Actually, you almost say that I haven't changed anything, just because every year I'm always doing a little bit more, a little bit faster. You know, ever since I was in high school, ever since I started running, for that matter, it's always been a slow progression, going up and up and up. That basically hasn't changed this year.
What about with an eye toward Beijing, for you, hopefully, you know, as conditions and whatever? Is that something that you've thought about?
Oh, for sure.
Are you?
For sure. That's something that was a little bit different from, especially from, for example, 2004. But even 2005, you could say, or even 2006, for that matter. I mean, 2017. I'm definitely, like, very much looking at, you know, August/Beijing, hopefully, as what I'm training for. Whereas 2004, like, my season going into, like, the plan for that season was to have my very, very best race at the Olympic Trials. Just because I hadn't really established myself in the world of running as somebody who could just, you know, not that I'm taking for granted the trials, but, like, I think I'm in a little bit different position where I can have a little bit more foresight and look at the Olympics as a very real possibility that I'm going to be competing at the Olympic Games. So everything mentally, training-wise, sort of geared towards that. Whereas, you know, in 2004, I was like, I just want to make good. We'll worry about the Olympics when we get to the Olympics, you know. My peak was Olympic trials. I think that, you know, mentally for me, too. Like, by the time I had gotten to the Olympics, by the time I had gotten to Athens, I was just like, drained mentally, because just like, I made my first Olympic team. It was like a really emotional thing, and like, so the dynamic is a little bit different this time. I'm definitely, you know, really looking at Beijing.
Can you peak twice? Peak for the trials and the Olympics?
I wouldn't even say it's peaking twice. It's almost one in the same peak. I mean, they're kind of close enough together where it's
maintaining.
Yeah, it's kind of the, I mean, a peak isn't necessarily, it's not like the window of peak is like a 24 hour thing, you know. It's like, you know, it's a generalized thing, you know. You have a peak period, and you can not even longer than that, actually. I mean, I would say I'm peaking for the season. You know, my season would be, you know, the outdoor track season, which is June, July, and August. And not even just the Olympics, but also stuff, you know, I want to race after the Olympics too. I mean, there's, you know, there's Grand Prix stuff to be done after the Olympics, and, you know, that's part of my training as well, you know, getting ready for that stuff too. But obviously the primary objective.
Well, it's funny, I mean, because the golfers, for instance, they're peaking for majors, and they may be, even when they're playing another tournament, they may be working on certain shots they know they're going to need for the big one that's down the road.
Yeah.
You know, it's just in their head.
It's the same kind of thing, I think. It's, you know, you're like this race, not that obviously it's an important race, but like, I'm, you know, my whole year is geared towards just this one. Just this one race. It's sort of part of the plan to get me to later in the summer.
What are some of the other things that you're fixing into your schedule or routine that illustrates how you're pointing towards Beijing? I mean, will you be training in certain places to try to help prepare you for conditions?
No. I'm not really going to do any of the conditions kind of training. Everybody always asks that, like, first of all, like, how could you? I mean, unless you actually go to Beijing and train in Beijing, you're not going to be able to duplicate that. I don't know. Do you see the conclusion there?
Traded LA.
You know, but it's like, I mean, come on, guys. It's like, I'm just going to get as strong as I can. it's going to be equal for everybody. Everybody's going into the basically the same situation. Like, nobody trains in Beijing, so everybody's going to be dealing with it for the most part the same. Just like in Osaka. I mean, nobody trains in conditions like, you know, just super mega humid like that. So I'm just going to get as strong as I can. And that's it. You know, if we all start off at the same level, but my level is a little bit higher, and we all lose 1% or whatever, then I'm stronger than everybody else. I'll still be stronger than everybody else. I'm just not going to set the world record, I guess, you know, at the Olympic Games. So that's what I'm doing. I'm not really thinking about it. I'm just getting as strong as I possibly can, and then I'll go over there and take care of business.
After last year, did you and Scott sit down? Do you guys kind of collectively kind of collaborate on the season and kind of starting the season later? Was, you know, like, who brought that up, or was he kind of presents the ideas to you? I'm just kind of wondering kind of how that dynamic works.
We sat down after the season and sort of talked about sort of reflected on the year. And, we were obviously both happy with how things went. Actually, one of the things I was really happy with myself is that the fact that, at the time, disappointed as I was after Osaka, I kind of forced myself to tough it out and keep going. Like, I honestly just wanted to stop running, not compete at all, and not run into race anymore, just because I was so, like, just frustrated. Basically, Coach Rocco told me, like, hey, man, I know you're not, like, feeling good about yourself right now, but you got to just get out there again and keep going. And I think that it was really, a mental battle to, like, just keep going, keep trying, even though I wasn't, like, feeling as good as I wanted to. Go into races not feeling good, pretty much. And, like, eventually, you know, like, Grand Prix final, I finished seventh. And then, I finished seventh. And Grand Prix final, I finished fifth or fourth or something like that. And then I won fifth avenue. So it was like, I came around eventually. And, like, it was, even though I didn't really want to race anymore, I did it anyway. And eventually, you know, I was like, all right, okay. I ended on a good note. And when we sat back and just, you know, we talked about what the season was, and we were definitely happy with the year. But when we talked about the plans for this year, we talked about how, you know, last year I needed to do some more stuff earlier on. But at this point, going into this year, I wanted to just train for a while, you know, get stronger and really focus on, you know, improving, because there was always time to race, you know, and I felt like I'd proven to myself that I'd taken it a step forward, just because I ran so many great races in the summer that I didn't have anything to prove, basically. So I was like, well, let's just train for a while, and we've been doing that, and it's been going well, and here we are. We'll see how well it's been going.
You said you felt you didn't want to run anymore. Ever?
Oh, no, not ever. I just meant in the first... I meant I wanted to, like, stop and start over. Start for the next year. Of course not ever. Come on. I just wanted to call it a season, you know. It took a lot to go run again. I didn't really want to. But I'm glad I did, obviously. I think it helped in training, just having that boost of a little bit of confidence, you know. There's nothing like winning a race. Like, it's just a different thing. Like, you know, when I won Fifth Avenue, it was like, it's just different. You know, they did well at those other two races, but it was like, it's hard to describe. Like, win the win.
Which race were you most pleased with last year? Was it Paris or the American Record?
Paris is definitely my best race. I just, everything, time, strategy, you know, thinking on my feet, everything. I just felt like I did a great job. That was definitely my best race. For sure.
Were you surprised how fast you ran 800?
Yeah, honestly, to be perfectly honest. I knew I was ready to go, but I didn't quite think I was that ready to go. In retrospect, I guess I'm not that surprised, just because, like, the 800 is kind of a funny event. It's like, it's really like a rhythm event. Like, you really have to kind of do it a few times to get it, really get it down. It's kind of been like an egg I've been trying to crack for like a number of years. Like, I've really been trying to like get my 800 better, but it just never quite, like, I knew, like, I always knew the speed was there, but it just didn't quite click in. And it's just that day, I found it, and then it was funny. It was like that race was easier than when I ran 145 like a month earlier, 3 weeks earlier, a month earlier.
Fewer opportunities to screw up too.
Yeah, that's true. It's a rhythm event. You have to, like, I mean, cause it's hard to know, like, what your body's going to do when you're coming to the 400 at, you know, 50 seconds. Like, well, what does a 50-second 400 be like? I don't know. How many, like, how often, like, I don't do that specific of 800-meter training to really know how you're going to feel, so it's kind of, like, hard to judge.
How did it feel?
Not that hard, you know. But, you know, something just clicked and I was able to hold on. That's pretty much what it was. It was like I was able to hold on this time.
Run four and hold on for four?
Pretty much, yeah.
It's a long hold.
Yeah, I know. And, like, sometimes you just kind of collapse, you know, your body just shuts off. But that time I was able to, you know, break through that little barrier. And that's the difference between running 145 and 143. That little extra bit of strength to where, you know, I can make it through. I can push the whole way without, you know, without any gaps in the effort. Whereas, you know, if you're not right, because you're right on that edge where you're pushing the limit, and if you go too far over, then your body is not going to let you go anymore.
I guess, Coach Rasko, was there any surprise to that race for you? I mean, is there any doubt he could run 143 in your mind?
I think it was a little bit surprising. The final result, wasn't quite sure that he'd run that fast, but I think we figured 144, definitely.
It was 143.9.
Hey, 143, 143.
I
mean, what? One, two other guys maybe broke 144 last year. Maybe one only.
Something like that. Yeah.
Not many.
You moved on to the quarter now.
Okay. When I run 800 this summer, I'm going to think back to this race and be like, oh man, this thing, you did 10 by 800, zero rep. And now you're going to have to do one. Think of it that way, huh? Yeah, I don't make the 800 seem a little easier.
I know it's way early for this question, but is there any 1500 time you have in mind for yourself this season?
Faster than 3:30. You know, I mean, I just want to get a best time, basically. That's pretty much my goal every year, just to keep it moving. It's just neat now that my best times are, like, close to, like, records and stuff. So, you know, and if I improve at all, I'm going to be, you know, knocking on the door of, you know, cool stuff. That's been the theme of my whole career, really. Just keep getting better. Better and better and better. And eventually you're going to approach barriers that are, you know, significant to, you know, to everybody, not just yourself. So I'd like to break 3:30, but I'm not really focused that much on time this year, especially this year. More focused on the competition.
Can you talk a little bit about the competition?
For the most part, I think it's the same people as it was last year. With the maybe add in. You're going to have to help me with his name. The guy who won World Indoors.
Mekinen.
Teresi. Teresi. The Ethiopian kid. Who won World Indoors. He's about the only guy that I don't really know or race against. That sort of popped up. But it's mostly about the same guys. Mehdi Bala, Ramsey, obviously Bernard Begat, the Ethiopian kids. I'm leaving people out, but
Kenyans we haven't heard of yet.
Probably. So you know, it's for the most part from so far. Obviously not just indoors. So, basically the same cast of characters, but you know, those are obviously great. You know, great runner, and it won't be easy at all. It's not gonna be easy. You guys could see from what happened at World. You know, if you're, you know, I was less than a second from Bernard when I was eight. So there's a lot of guys in a very short window of time. So it's you got to be on top of your game, or else you will be pushed to the back.
Shifting back to this race, sorry if this question's already been asked, what's your strategy for the race on Saturday?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I haven't run a whole lot of road races.
Yeah.
But road racing's a little bit different dynamic on the track. It's going to be a little. I don't know. I don't even know what my strategy is going
to
be.
From the front.
I think it's going to be more of a like an effort thing. It's not going to be like. There's kind of less tactics involved, I guess, road running. Just because there's, you know, you don't have to like run on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's sort of free to move. So there's a little bit less of that involved.
Mm-hmm.
Plus it's longer, so that kind of takes some of it away. But I'm gonna have to get out there and see how I feel the first part of the race. Which is different than a 1500 or a mile, where you don't really have time to see how you feel. Kind of, you got to go no matter how you feel.
And you have previewed the course.
I did actually. I saw the course today for the first time. I ran the course today for the first time, and it's actually decent. It looks pretty fast. I know Meb ran 22:16 or something.
Yeah.
22:16, I believe. So it's definitely capable of running fast.
Is that mark on your mind, or the record 3K on your mind?
It's on my mind, but like I said, I don't know. It's hard to gauge something like that. I don't want to say that I'm like, I mean, I guess we're all kind of going for it. But I just have to get out there and see how I feel and go from there.
Just 5 mile repeats, no time to sleep.
Exactly. Or 10 by 800. You know, either way you look at it. Or 80 times 100.
Oh, don't push it.
When you signed up for the race, and they hadn't announced Dathan yet, but did you know that Dathan was expected to run then, or?
At that point, I don't think I was. I knew he was going to run. I don't think I knew anybody was going to run. I knew it was the U.S. Championship. And so I figured somebody's going to show up. I figured that offering $10,000 to the winner, somebody's going to try to win that. And so it's going to be some pretty good people who are going to show up. And that's what I was looking for. I was just looking for a competitive 8K. Gosh, the cross country is 8K, even 10K. So 12K, a little bit too long. Yeah, I was just looking for a race of this distance, competitive, and so I knew people would show up. I didn't know Dathan was going to run, but when he signed up, I would feel even better. They dropped out, so but there's still good guys. I mean, obviously George is going to be in there. It's Ed dropped out, but James, I forgot about James Carney, who won U.S. half marathon, and then Andrew Carlson, who just won last weekend, who's like running the best he's ever run. So there's still gonna be. There's some horses in there to run again.
And when you step up in distance, what's your kind of mindset? I mean, is there some part of you that's like, hey, I'm better than these guys that, you know, up at 10K too? I mean, obviously you beat Dathan that one time at 10K. Is there some kind of pride, I mean, even though it's not your main event, that kind of in the back of your mind, like, hey, you know, if I wanted to, I could step up and run up to 10K and beat these guys?
Yeah. I go into all my races thinking that I can win the race. I try not to enter races that I don't think I can win. But you know, like I definitely don't discount any of the guys that I'm running against. You know, they're definitely had a lot of success, and I'll never beat George technically. You know, in their head to head. But I enjoy the fact that I enjoy doing different kinds of races, different distances, longer, shorter. I like the fact that I can differ it up. Makes it more interesting. But I wouldn't say that. Yeah, I think about necessarily. Because I have a faster 10K than these guys, I automatically want to be able to beat them. You know. Different race, different circumstances. Maybe a different focus for different people. They're doing different training for different times of year, and so you never know what everybody's doing. You can't really discount anybody or be too overconfident in how you're gonna run. But I'm in good shape, so I'm gonna run well.
Alan, when you look back to your senior year in high school miling, does that seem like a century ago, or does it seem like yesterday?
It's starting to feel like a lot. It's starting to feel like, wow, that was a while ago that I did some of that stuff. I don't know, I guess I've been running for... competitively running for 10 years now, I guess. So when I think back to even my senior year in high school, gosh, it was like so long ago, 7 years ago. And it was a while. New York City, I broke 4 minutes 6 years ago, over 6 years ago. Oh, I'm sorry, it was 7 years ago. Seven.
Well, to extend the question, your senior year in high school was like obviously over the moon. And since then, like every athlete, you've had good races and bad, good years and bad. Do you feel older, wiser, stupider, more cynical?
I'm definitely smarter. You know, I definitely learned a lot about myself, about what it takes to be, what it really takes to be good. I also learned that when I was running in high school, I had no idea what I was doing. You know, what I was doing in high school was like totally disinteresting. You know, like it wasn't. It was just my pure competitive. You know, just go out there and just run as hard as you can, and there it is. Just because that's all I needed. You know, when I was running against high school competition, there wasn't really a need for me to get nitpicky, because if I had an off day, I'd win by 10 seconds instead of 12. You know, whatever.
Has it been? You probably ended up where you thought you'd be. You know, top 1, 2, or 3 milers in the world. It was kind of getting there a lot harder than you actually thought it would be at the time.
In a way, yes. In some ways, yes. Some ways, no. I think that, or I guess it was almost like I didn't even think about it. Like sometimes I feel when I think back to those times when I was in high school, like stuff was happening so fast that I wasn't even thinking about. Like I was just trying to, I just wanted to be the best guy in the, you know, in the country, and the best high school guy in the country. I wasn't even thinking about, like, oh, I want to be the best runner in the world. I mean, once I did some of the things in high school, I was like, oh, wow, that's when those thoughts started coming up. But I felt like it wasn't until the very, very end that I started having, like, I mean, I've always wanted to be an Olympian since I was, you know, forever. But it wasn't like a real tangible thing until some of that stuff in high school happened. Like, I didn't really be like, oh my gosh, I could actually, you know, this is really going to happen. How am I going to do this? So I feel like once I had those real thoughts in my head, like, okay, the next step for me would be to be the best in the country and then the best in the world. It definitely was, it was harder than I thought it would be. It was definitely harder than I thought. I had to get down and get dirty and do workouts that were crazier and harder than I thought I would have to do. Things that I couldn't have dreamed of doing in high school. But I all along I knew it was worth it, you know, because I knew how good it felt. I think that's what I got, what I did in high school. Like, I got addicted to having a goal and then working hard, making sacrifices, and then accomplishing that goal. And like, I knew how good that felt. So any struggle that I was thrown, I was able to, you know, overcome those struggles, because I knew that in the end, if I really did the work and really sacrificed the things I needed to sacrifice, then it would be all worth it. And you know, here we are, and I've improved a lot since then, and I've done some pretty cool things since I was in high school, and you know, it's working so far.
Does it still sometimes boil down to you before, when you're talking about how you ran in high school, I mean, or earlier in the earlier days, the competitive juices and just the instinct, running on instinct, running as hard as you could? I mean, does it sometimes still boil down to that?
Sometimes, yeah. A lot of the time, it comes down to that. And a lot of times I have to remind myself that, to be like, hey, just relax. Just don't worry. Like, it'll
do what comes naturally.
Yeah, when I'm the Olympic, you know, the world championship final, you know, the last lap, I mean, who wouldn't get pumped up for that? Come on. You know, it's like, you'll be ready when you need to be ready. Like, don't stress about it. Like, you know, there's no use in getting all jazzed up for the last lap of the Olympic final, you know, a year before the Olympic final, because there's nothing, you know, you can't do it until you're actually there. And you just sort of have to, like, let it be until you actually get into the situation. And I guess just because, you know, I put pressure on myself, I have a desire to succeed, and so I put the pressure on myself is what it is, and sometimes I have to sort of remind myself that, you know, the best way is to deal with that.
You ever tell you, I mean, when we're doing, you know, visualizing, do you ever say to yourself when you want to sprint finish in at the end of a practice, now I'm on the last lap, of this is the kick for the whatever?
I actually don't visualize it that much. I mean, I'll definitely have focus. You know, for example, like at the end of a workout, you know, the last lap of whatever interval I'm doing, or if it's just one lap or whatever. You know, definitely be like, all right, last one, let's go. And really get pumped up for that.
But you're not hearing the crowd in your ear?
No, not really. Not really. I think it's all just kind of instinct, kind of. You know, it's like I sort of treat it almost like its own race. You know, like I'm, you know,
gonna go as hard.
This is a race against myself today. I'm not racing against anybody. I'm just racing against myself. And you do that enough times, then when you get into the race situation, I've done it before. I've been there in practice, and I'll be ready for it.
Alan, you've been saying interesting let it be kind of stuff a lot this morning. Has somebody been feeding you Zen books?
Zen books? I didn't notice. I mean, I think that sort of what I've, a good way for me, what I've learned to, what has helped me, I guess, in my training is to, it's just sort of not stress about things. Like, if you, because I know that I've done the work. I know that I've put it all in, and so there's no reason to like get all stressed out about something because just because I'm confident and that I've done the work and I've been there before and I've been on the highest stage. I've been to the Olympics. I've been to the World Championships. And now it's just a matter of like, all right, go do it. You know, if you want to win the race, you go win the race. Don't make it so complicated. No, but no Zen book. No Zen book.
You're picking it up somewhere.
Yeah, I don't
maybe
know.
It's just like. Do you ever feel like you're a prisoner of the mile? Meaning, if you were to announce today that you were running the 5,000 all year long, a lot of people would say, hey, it's a pretty good idea.
They would. Maybe on my, but only on my own. I'd say I'm just like a prisoner of my own. I hate to say we're a prisoner, though. It sounds a little morbid, though. I'd say I'm just like. I've submitted my own passion for running, you know, passion for getting, for improving. You know, I could say all my whole life, I've always just wanted to be the best at something, be good at something. I guess it started out just being, you know, I wanted to be good at something, and I wanted to be the best kid in my class, and the best kid in my school, and eventually, you know, I just had this natural desire to want to do something really, really well. And
but why does it have to be a mile?
I guess that started just because ever since I was a kid, you know, it's always sort of been my event, you know. Like I said, it's such a familiar distance. And then eventually it was the event that I had the most success in. You know, nobody wants to do the event, you know. I wouldn't have been the greatest shot putter or something.
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, shot put's cool, but, you know, I would have sucked. I wouldn't have been nearly as fun. But I was good at the mile, and it was something I grew up with and familiar, and yeah, there it is.
Do you remember when you were young, your first recognition of the Olympics was remotely watching TV or something? Was it maybe even swimming more than track?
My first real memories of watching the Olympics were in, I think it was 19. How old was that? 4? No, 13. I was 13.
96.
I was 90, in 96, I got mono. The summer of 96, I got mononucleosis. And it was right during the time when I was starting to get really into swimming. And I was getting good at it. And I had to sit out for the all-star meet of my summer league team. We had a summer league team which was a little bit less formal, but then we had a club team. That's what, when I joined the club team, one of the benefits of joining the club team was that when you trained all year, and then when you swam in the summer league, a lot of those kids didn't swim year round, so you just like clean up because you're practicing all winter. So it was like, you know, your time to shine was in the summer, whether you just kick everybody's butt. And so I had to miss my all-star meet. I was so disappointed. I was like, I just remember being really disappointed that I couldn't swim in the all-star meet. And I had mono, and I was all sick. And I watched like probably almost every minute that NBC broadcasts the Olympics, I watched. just because I was bored. I had nothing, you know, I watched everything, like, you know, rhythmic gymnastics, you know, rowing, the whole shebang. I just watched everything. I remember watching Michael Johnson at the 200 record. And it was then, that was probably the start. That was when I really decided that I wanted to be good. Because I started to become more serious in swimming, but that was when I really became serious. And over the next 2 years, I really got into swimming going into my freshman year in high school. And that was what helped me do so well and succeed so well in running early on, because I was in the pool twice a day, you know, like, just doing crazy stuff. And so by the time I got to high school and started running, I had this, like, work ethic, and I had I knew how to push myself. And that's how I decided that I wanted to be good. I remember my sister, you know, right after the 96 Olympics, when they announced that Athens was going to be 2008, my sister went to Greece with her husband and bought a t-shirt, an Athens 2004 t-shirt that she gave me that summer, later in the summer, or later in the fall or something.
What year was that?
It's still 96. Right after they...
Probably the year...
Maybe the year later.
7 years.
Yeah, 7 years. So I guess it was the next summer that she gave me a shirt that's Athens 2004, and I had that shirt at least. I don't know what I did with it, but I had that shirt up until 2004. I wore that shirt every race in 2004 to warm up.
Athens, underneath. Athens 2004.
It said it was like no name brand, like, you know, Hanes Iron On T-shirt. You know, it's like really. By the time I got to 2004, it was all torn up.
Violation of Olympic logo.
It was just some guy on like a street corner in Athens just like drew it, and like I had this T-shirt for.
Four rings.
For 7 years. Seriously, I remember being like, I'll be 21 in 2004. Like, I could do that. I'll be 21. That'd be like a good age, you know. I could make it. And so it was like to actually, you know, see that come to full, you know, full bloom and actually make it there was like, you know, it's pretty cool.
Story,
like a kid who's 13, 14 years old has this thing and it actually happens. Like, that doesn't happen all the time. And like, that's why, like, just making it to the Olympics was like so huge for me.
Just to clarify, in 96, and when your sister gave you the shirt, you were thinking to make it swimming.
I was thinking to make it swimming, that's right.
What was your event and your best time?
My best event, it's kind of funny because I think one of the reasons why I do, or I guess I'm able to do, or I choose to do a variety of events in running, because I kind of did everything in swimming too. Like my best event was probably the 200 breast and or the 400 IM. I don't think I was quite good at the 400 IM because I was still pretty young. And 400 IM is like, 400 IM is kind of like a mile. It's like
torture.
Tough. Like everything. It's like aerobic, anaerobic. It just, you got lots of bad chemicals going through your body when you're when you're doing it. It hurts a lot. I remember my at Junior Champs my freshman year in the winter, I did 6 events in 3 days. I did the 100 breast prelims and finals, the 200 breast prelims and finals, the 500 freestyle prelims and finals, the 200 IM, no 500, no 500 prelims, the 200 IM prelims and finals, the 400 IM prelims and finals, and it's 1650. Yeah, it was only one race.
It's 11 races.
So it was 11 races in 3 days.
What meet was this?
This is Senior Champs, my freshman year.
States?
Senior Champs.
What Senior Champs?
Senior Champs. It's just called Senior. It was like, it'd be like the Potomac Valley Swimming.
Yeah.
Is like, it's kind of like
an
basically like the Metro DC area,
right?
Championships is what it would be like. Like Michael Phelps' club, North Baltimore.
Yeah.
They're in. Like I raced against his club when I was in high school.
That wasn't very smart.
It's
a very good club.
He's younger than me, so
yeah.
He was probably better than me.
They had a lot of people.
But no, I swam with some good, pretty good. I swam at the end. I swam with Tom Dolan's coach, who held the world record before.
Tom Dolan's his coach,
Rick Curl.
Club coach.
Rick Curl.
And Curl Burke. Yes.
I swam with him for a year. The last summer before I quit, I swam with Rick Curl. My club folded. Anyway, like you can see, like I did everything. But I was like a decent sprinter, and I could, like when I swam like the 100 freestyle, you know, I was like, I wasn't the best guy, but I was respectable, which would be the equivalent time wise like a 400. You know, I could do it, and I wasn't like the best, which is kind of like almost basically the same now. Like I could do everything, you know, my 400. I wouldn't, you know, I'm definitely not gonna make the Olympic team 400, but you know, I can run it. I wouldn't embarrass myself. You know,
do you or
Shalane
like,
cross?
Yeah, he's playing the swimmer too. And I think that kind of mentality that, like, you know, I grew up where I was like, oh, just do the 1650, you know, whatever, just do it. You know, it's not like not a big deal. You just kind of go and you compete. And, you know, I'm not gonna win the marathon. You know, I'm not gonna set the world record in the marathon, but you know, I'll do a longer race if I want to. You know, hey, I'm not afraid of it.
Good psychological training, actually, for running.
If you let me run the 400, I'd probably do it. But,
yeah. Did you cross paths with Kate Ziegler?
I haven't.
Because
You
guys are in the same area.
We're in the same area. My dad always gives me will give me articles about Kate. She's younger than me, so she was like, I was done swimming by the time she started like really kicking butt. But no, I definitely know of Kate, and you know, my dad always gives me, because the Post writes about her, so my dad will always be like, hey, it's Stephen Kate. You know, that was so cool. She broke Janet Evans' world record.
Yeah.
A hell of a thing.
Yeah.
Accomplishment was.
But yeah, like swimming is, those guys, the training for that is weird and crazy. Yeah. Intervals every day, twice a day. Yeah, so not only was I doing stuff twice a day, it was like intervals twice a day.
Yeah, the great swimming workout, Mary T. Meyer, the butterfly, 1,500 butterfly.
1,500 butterfly?
All at once.
I did a 200 butterfly like twice in my whole career. Oh, that was like, that was the event that I just dreaded.
Oh, that's...
But you had to do it though, because if you want to be a really good swimmer, I am. Yeah.
You got to have the strength.
You got to have the strength. That's why Phelps is so good. Because I mean, he's in his whatever it was, 2000 or no? Yeah, 2000.
He made the team.
It was his 200 fly. His first event, and he made the Olympic team. He was like, you know, I think he got the bronze or something like that.
Yeah, he's fifth.
He was fifth. Okay, yeah. But 200 fly. So then when he goes to do the 400 IM, because that first 100 is the key. If you can survive that 100 fly and feel decent in the 400 IM, dude, you're set. Because it kills most people. But he's so used to, like, just having that 200 fly background just helps him so much in the 400.
So you're going to quit running and go back to swimming?
No, I'm too short, man. Phelps is like 6'11 or whatever.
7'3. You know?
Yeah,
been growing.
You know, his wingspan is like...
They all are, yeah.
Seriously, I think that's one of the reasons why I wasn't... Yeah, I wasn't that tall. My limbs, like his wingspan... Think of how much... You know, his stroke is so much longer. Like, but it hurt them. He probably wouldn't be the greatest runner. You know.
He's a terrible runner. He is. He said, when I'm out of water, I'm a fish out of water. I mean, that's literally his line that he uses.
He can do a modern pentathlon with him then.
But I think that's why, like, my body type, like, fits running more. I'm an average guy. Not too tall, not too short, whatever.
Alan, last time I saw you right after Fifth Avenue Mile, you were like, oh man, I can't wait to park my ass on a sofa and watch a bunch of football, drink beer, and eat chips.
It was awesome.
So how long does that go on, and why is it necessary, and then how long does it take to recharge and get back to the training?
Well, even when I started running, I was still doing that. But that's kind of, seriously, that's kind of part of, like, the routine is, like, you know, learning, you have to rest, too. Like, I mean, I work really hard, but I also, you know, rest is crucial part of training. And I've learned how valuable it is, you know. You learn how valuable it is once you don't have it. You know, for example, like, if I go do a run in the morning, and I have to go, you know, let's say I have to go do a bunch of errands or something like that. I have two runs. So I have a run in the morning, and I have to go do a bunch of errands during the day. And, you know, I'm, like, doing who knows what. You know, I have to get my car inspected, I go to the grocery store, blah, 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 blah. And then you come back at night, and you do another run, and you're like, oh, man, I feel terrible. Whereas you go to a different day, you do a run in the morning, and you go back home, chill out, you know, watch some TV. I'd say I'd read, but I don't know that.
You're not really reading.
I always try to, but, like, if I want to take a nap, I'll pick a book up. And then I'll put it to sleep. You'll be fine. You know, you'll feel pretty good in the afternoon, and you're like, whoa! It just shows you how, you know, you really got to chill, because if you're, you know, it's not a small margin of error. You can't be, you know, off doing whatever.
But how long was the serious down period?
The serious down period wasn't too long.
Yeah,
maybe of nothing, like pure nothing, no running at all. Gosh, maybe 2 weeks.